browse our online courses and transform your education today.
You're listening to At Large on 101.5 UMFM. Yeah, we started the set with the Irish folk band Lancome. We heard Clear Away, and that was from their False Lancome album, and that was released in 2023. That was the Irish folk band's fourth album. Then it was two from Alanis Morissette. We heard You Learn and Head Over Feet, both from her Jagged Little Pill album, released in 1995. And then finishing the set was the OCs with Always at Night, and that was from their Intercepted Message album, and that was released in 2023, and that was the San Francisco band's 28th album. Wow. I'm going to end the show now. Usually I play a Manitoba band or a Winnipeg band to end the show, but I'm running out of time. I don't have enough time left. But I was going to throw a curve this week, so I'm going to save that for next week. So, yeah, I thank you very much for listening. The show's called At Large. I'm here Wednesdays, most Wednesdays, from 4 until 5:30. So what can I say? Have a great week, and I hope the weather warms up. It's At Large on 101.5 UMFM.
After a pandemic-induced hiatus, Pleasurama, UMFM's listener funding drive, makes its triumphant return, running from 6:30 p.m. Friday, April 19th to 8 p.m. on Friday, April 26th. Our goal this year is to collect $28,000, with 100% of all funds raised going towards necessary station expenses. To celebrate Pledgerama's return, we've got some amazing incentives to thank you for your generous donation, including keychains and can koozies, two different kinds of mugs, a cooler bag, a brand new hoodie, and the latest UMFM t-shirt, all featuring a fantastic throwback logo, courtesy of Mr. Alan Lord. Or, if you prefer, you can always take a tax receipt. We only ask for your support once a year in order to keep on giving you the great radio you've come to expect from UMFM. Visit umfm.com/donate for complete details on pre-pledging and how to make a pledge now or during Pledgerama 2024, April 19th to 26th.
The AMSU Service Center is your one-stop shop for all the information on campus. If you've got a question about university or AMSU, the AMSU Service Center is the spot to get all the information you seek. We've got the 411 on university-related matters, referral and directions to office location and more. We're currently open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. till 5 p.m. Come visit us in room 101 on the main floor of AMSU University Center. Call us at 204-474-8211 or email us at amsu@amsu.ca.
Good evening and welcome to Art World Innovators, exploring stories of innovation in the art world. I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba.
Our guests this evening are Kiki Thompson and Madeline Paterneau, co-founders of the Verbier 3D Sculpture Park and Residency, a museum without walls in the heart of the Swiss Alps. Verbier 3D Foundation is a cultural organization dedicated to contemporary art, environmentalism, and education through their artist residency and sculpture park. The foundation has hosted over 35 Swiss and international artists in research-led residencies that push artists out of their comfort zones to develop innovative new works in dynamic natural surroundings, which may not be possible in their studio spaces. Curators Alexa Jean Kusper and Paul Goodwin offer artists personalized curatorial support from both academic and practice-based perspectives. Each year, thought-provoking themes are offered for artists to explore in their work and community, and tourist visitors are invited to learn more through engaging educational programs and events. Kiki is also an established artist exhibiting her sculptures in Switzerland, New Zealand, New York, California, and London. Her work appears in significant public and private collections, such as sculpture parks in New Zealand and Switzerland, and the permanent collection Musée Cantonal des Beaux-Arts in Sion, Switzerland. She studied art in French at Anglia Ruskin University in Cambridge, UK, had a short career as a professional snowboarder following the World Cup circuit. Kiki also worked on an inspiring project with Crystal, his umbrella project in California. Madeline is also a Swiss-American artist dedicated to painting, installation, and sculpture work. She received her BA from Vassar College in cultural anthropology. Her work appears in significant public and private collections based in London, Paris, Milan, New York, Geneva, and Dubai. Madeline also teaches for the Verbier 3D Residency and Sculpture Park. Welcome to Art World Innovators, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you.
You opened a very innovative and unique artist residency in Sculpture Park. What was your vision for this venture, and how did you start out?
Well, we were both at the School of Visual Arts Summer Artist Residency in New York. Having obviously known each other from Verbier, it wasn't an accident that we were both there at the same time. And we were meeting up several times and discussing perhaps starting a sculpture park in Verbier, but doing it with an artist residency, because we thought it was important to have that aspect to it rather than just plunk random sculptures on the mountain. Maddie, would you like to continue?
I just wanted to add that one of the reasons that we actually, what really crystallized for us while we were in the residency was, it was really also the fact that residencies that we had just experienced really did not exist at all in Switzerland. So there was this impetus to really create something that we personally would love to have had access to within Switzerland.
You have a remarkable sculpture park to exhibit the works that these artists create. Can you walk us through the entrance and describe what we would see as we view the collection and the dynamic surroundings?
So the sculpture park is actually opened year round, and it's at an altitude of 2,300 meters. So the first thing that's very different about the sculpture park is depending on what time of year and how you can access it. So the first thing is, in the summer months, you could actually hike up or drive up and walk through it. In the winter months, you'd be taking a cable car actually to get to the top, where you could ski through it. So those are the first big pivotal changes in what the sculpture park looks like. In obviously the summer months, it's beautiful big fields where we are also within the zone of all the local cow herders, where they have all their cows out for the summer out to pasture in order to make all the local cheese. So we have a lot of cows around all our sculptures. In the winter months, of course, there's snow, and some of the sculptures could be half buried because we don't actually control that aspect of nature, obviously. The park itself is on a not too steep gradient, long road on the very edge of the mountain. And opposite the valley, you have the most amazing vistas, including the Grand Combin and the remaining glaciers. So you can see all the crevices open in the summer. Obviously, in the winter, there's snow on top. So you have this incredible view. And then the sculptures are dotted around throughout this landscape in a spot chosen by the artists and also reaffirmed by the cows, whether this spot is a good spot or the cows dominate and we must move the sculpture to a less favorable spot by the cows. So I would say that it's just a very big open space area rather than a specific park. At either end of the sculpture park, there's some big restaurants so clients can meander through and stop off and have some food. One of the starting sculptures in the park is by Grimazzo Kohler. It's called Interference Cube, and it's a very, very large concrete cube, and on the inside are acoustic sound waves. You can actually climb inside the sculpture, speak, and the sound, your voice will just echo across, and then you have this amazing view across the valley. And then another sculpture that I love talking about as well is by Bureau A, and it's called Antoine, and it's actually it looks like a huge rock that's perched quite steeply up above the road, and you can hike up to it. And if you get inside this rock, there's a little door, and you can actually sleep inside the rock, and you can make a little bit of heat. And we allow people to stay there, and they just need to leave it tidy after they've been there. And we always ask for a little donation. The idea is also that the park is quite organic, and we just really want people walking through it to have this rambler's discovery, in the same way that the artists also rambled around the mountain to choose their spots. We really work in tandem at producing that.
The other part that's interesting about it is that in the winter, you can ski tour through the park. You can also hike or snowshoe through the park. There are also dog sleds that can take you through, which is quite fun. And then in the summer, you can mountain bike, e-bike, hike. In the summer, you can also access with the lifts. The lift system works in the summer as well as in the winter. So it's pretty accessible for everybody.
Who was the first artist in residence and what was the theme or concept behind their work?
So our first residency, actually, we had 7 artists in residence at that time. We felt like we needed to add a fair amount of work to the park. So we decided to go big, as it were. So we had Zach Ove, Donna Dodson, Musa Hickson, Andy Moorline. I was one of them as well. And Gregory Coates and Timothy Talbot Holmes. We basically had a giant studio space that was in the central parking lot. And it was a giant marquee. And everyone was allotted their space. And some people were working outside as well. And it was a little intense at times because of personalities and stress and so forth. But it was quite an amazing thing to be a part of as well. And to put the sculptures up into the park. And we also asked some artists to donate their work for a period of time. And one of the sculptures that's in the park has been there since that year as well, a Swiss artist called Etienne Cranbull. It was an interesting time. Now we only do one artist at a time so that we can work more intensely with that artist and develop their work and work on their research. And also, we like to do projects with them in the future. So it's not just the one time that they're here. It's an ongoing relationship.
So how do you select the artists for residencies?
We actually get a lot of submissions and a lot of referrals also through our curators. And we then spend a fair amount of time shortlisting perhaps, obviously, who the artists are, where are they from, where in their career are they, and gender, what their work looks like. And then we go through a rigorous interview process, mainly where we're really trying to figure out if these are artists that we could work with and could we have a long-term relationship with them. The residency itself with the 2 curators working really side by side, then Kiki on the ground in particular, working very intensely, providing lots of background and support information to the artists. It's like a very intensive and almost niche residency because of the level of interaction that we have with the artist. So we really want to make sure that we're going to gel well and be super productive, and also that we're going to be able to support the artists during what is going to be a difficult and extremely out of their comfort zone, but we still want to make sure that we can support them. We take into consideration all these different aspects before we commit to who we'd like to invite.
In your mission to support emerging and established artists to be creative beyond their comfort zone, can you share a few stories of how the sculptors have responded to this challenge?
Well, one particular artist who comes to mind. Well, there's 2 actually. So one is Chloe Dew Matthews, who's a photographer. And she was the first photographer who we invited to the sculpture park and is also a very good example of how we worked with her after the fact because we created a book with her from her series of inserts in Frankenstein. Normally with her work, she spends at least a year, maybe even 2 years doing a body of work. And we invited her out for, I think it was a total of 2, maybe 3 weeks. And she actually managed to get quite an amazing body of work from it. But pushing her out of the comfort zone, I would say one of the things that we did was quite amazing, where Alexa, myself and her, we hiked with a guide because there was danger of avalanche about 3 hours up the mountain to the dam, the Mauvoisin Dam, which is at the end of the valley. We ended up staying at the hut where the workers of the dam usually live. And for the last bit of the hike, the guide left us because he had something else to do. But I knew the way, it was fine, and there was no more danger of avalanche. And we ended up lying on the tarmac outside the hut because we had no way of getting in either. and listening to, there's a mountain called Mont Pleureur, which is like the crying mountain. And it was just avalanching, or bits of ice were falling down off of it while we're lying in the sun, sort of warming up from our long hike. And then we're reading Frankenstein. And it was quite a magical moment, actually. But I would say that would be definitely one example of pushing her out of her comfort zone. And then I would say the other one was with James Capper. And it was actually after his residency, he came back to drive his AeroCab, the sculpture that's on show in the sculpture park, and to drive it on the snow. And he was very, very nervous because he wasn't sure what was going to happen, basically. And I remember this one conversation I had with him. I said, you know, James, speed is your friend, as we're pushing him off down this hill. But it went really quite well, didn't it, Maddie? I think you saw it.
Yeah, it was one of those moments as well where, again, the artist was absolutely pushed beyond their boundaries, and the elation that he felt afterwards. And I think it's really pushed his career, which is the other aspect of pushing anyone out of their comfort zone, but still being there to support them through it, is what I think most of the artists have always come back to say. This residency was really pivotal in their art practice afterwards, when they went back to their regular studio and they would make big leaps in their production thereafter. So there's kind of a before and after Verbier experience.
Many of the artists design site-specific works. How are they site-specific, and how did the sculptures appear to engage in dialogue with nature?
Well, I think the classic one, and this is probably where I was pushed out of my comfort zone, actually, was Carsten Fodinger created a sculpture called Pilier Erratique. And it's basically like a metal cage in a mushroom column sort of form at the end of a row of rocks that come down. And it used to be a glacier, basically. And he and I filled up with about 3 tons of rocks the inside of this column over the period of a week. But the reason why I picked him as someone who's picked a sculpture that really fits in with nature is he really wanted to have plants growing on top of the sculpture so that it became part of the sculpture park. And a lot of people really poo-pooed the idea. They really thought there's no way that plants will grow up there. And sure enough, we've managed to create an environment where the plants are very happy to grow on top of the sculpture. And it really has taken to the environment itself. It's lovely.
You have mentioned that you collaborate with the artists as they design their works. How closely?
I think we, rather than collaborate, although I think putting stones into the sculpture may have been collaborating, I think we facilitate. If the sculptor needs to be in touch with a glaciologist, or in touch with someone who makes cowbells, or in touch with a glass maker, we do the grunt work and we find those people to make that combination happen. But I wouldn't say necessarily collaborate, because it really is their work. It's not ours.
You're both practicing artists. Can you tell us about your backgrounds and formal training and a bit about your art practice?
I'm a painter and I study cultural anthropology. I have always used my love of travel and of analyzing different cultures and of that theoretical research side of my brain. It has always been something that I use in my practice, in just even how I set myself up to produce artwork. And the themes that I cover of questioning, where does culture begin? Where does culture end in set questions? One of my last sort of parameters was in furniture and the actual question of what is a painting and what is furniture? And can you possibly just live with a painting of your furniture and no longer have furniture, and working on different aspects of making furniture feel more human through art and through painting. I've had various things, but the one thing that circles back to actually the sculpture park is I love collaboration and I love learning through collaboration in the practice of being an artist. So I think for me, the thing that I love about residencies in general is how they springboard your own curiosity and you learn so much from other people. So I would say that question and that quest that I've had pretty much as a young woman already studying at Vassar just has always continued and is always part of my practice just as an artist, undefined whether I'm actually painting or not painting. Yeah. Kiki, do you want to answer yours?
So I studied art, sculpture, and French, actually, at Anglia Ruskin University, and went sort of a process. Once I graduated, I went and worked on Christo's Umbrellas project in California, which for me was quite fundamental to the way I saw things as being possible, because Christo could really, he funded all of his work through his own artwork. He never went and got sponsors because he felt that that was limiting to what he could possibly do. And I think working for him and understanding that there was so much scope out there and that you could create such enormous pieces or installations, I think probably set me on track for the sculpture park as well. So I make my own sculptures and do my own work as well. But I think the sculpture park in itself is an interesting project to take on that's enormous. In the summer, it's 8 kilometers of hiking all the way along. And we have a summer exhibition that's flat panels and sort of pedagogical explanation of the work that's being installed in the actual sculpture park itself that's open year round. But basically, I'm digressing, but I continue to work, but I'm mostly working, doing commissions, and then I'm also teaching at the Verbier International School. So I enjoy passing on my knowledge to the kids and working with them. So again, like Maddie said, collaborating in lots of different levels, not just with the artists in the sculpture park, but also with the kids and seeing what they come up with and what sort of ideas they have.
Tell us about the work entitled Samsara and what were you looking to capture?
Well, Samsara is Sanskrit for life cycle. So I think if you look at it, it's almost like there's a little window where you can look through. So the person who's looking at the sculpture, there's two forms that are almost like two horns coming together or two birds coming together. There's a lot of imagery, but the idea is that the person who's looking at the sculpture will also look through that opening of the sculpture at the view behind and become connected and grounded in where they are in the environment.
Madeline, your formal background includes studies in cultural anthropology. Can you tell us about a painting or installation that reflects this interest?
Well, I would just say that I touched on that just a little bit in the sense that this interest I have in being a nomad and having a very nomadic lifestyle after university, I just always had these question marks of the importance of objects that you own to make home feel like home, which was the whole sort of furniture departure. And I also felt that moving meant that you have to pack up all the time. And so as a painter, I loved working huge. And so I decided I was going to have to find a technique. I would put so many canvases together to make one big painting, but then I could dismantle the whole thing, move it to a different location. And so I have this pack and go nomadic spirit is definitely present in a lot of the construction of my artwork. And then just the collaborative aspect of all this traveling and analyzing that I just use all the time. So I think studying cultural anthropology is a great springboard for being a painter afterwards. I was based in New York. I'm actually now living in London, but initially, what was great about New York was obviously the crazy frenetic energy. Could not be more completely opposite to Verbier. And so I think initially, I had been living in Verbier for 10 years, and it was wonderful to explore New York. And as a painter and starting the sculpture park, I think having that energy was definitely pivotal, at least from my perspective. And then the connections, because obviously there's a lot happening in a city that you want to maybe bring from the city out to the mountains. So it was great to have that dynamic experience. Since then, I've actually moved to London. And then that has the advantages, of course, we've been working with quite a few different artists from of different nationalities, but that are based in London. So having me here also is helpful for just basic interactions or meetings with artists or visiting artist studios. I'm still very present in New York as well. I do a lot of the city side of our searches.
What is your approach to expanding your park collection?
We're not really into expanding the collection as much as we are. The collection grows organically. So because we're outside at 2,300 meters, the sculptures are exposed to the elements, some high winds, snow, et cetera, et cetera. We do ask the sculptors that we invite create a work that will last at least 2 years. Usually they last longer, but we do regularly, maybe once every 2 years, we do remove sculptures because they've seen better days. So we take them down. So it's a constant evolution of the sculpture park. So I feel like it's alive. It's like an entity that breathes, and sometimes pieces go, sometimes pieces come, basically.
Do you want to tell us about a few of the themes and the focus of the exhibitions you've had and how the curators have contributed to the shows and supported the artists?
We are 100% focused on environmental questions. And over the last 13 years, the curators have fine-tuned within their interest of what they want to explore within those themes. Our last 2 years have been on the theme of water. We then help the artists understand and meet engineers or anything to do with water locally. So the residency itself is very research-based with a strong scientific and strong engineering component. We've had people find water where they have
the sticks,
and then they can feel the power of the water on the mountain, and then they can find where a source of water is. We've used all sorts of alternative ways to explore these questions for the artist.
Well, I think in terms of the curators, Paul Goodwin has always been a great support for the artists, and especially the emerging artists, but even the established ones. He'll have an interview with them mid-residency to discuss where their work is going, and will make comments or help them move along in certain directions. And then Alexa Jean Cusper is more of an on-the-ground curator who, in fact, she has contact with them even prior to them arriving in Verbier, sending lots of reading material for them to go through and really become comfortable before arriving here and meeting the locals that are of various professions that they want to meet. But it also helps them to maybe funnel their ideas into more pointed research for once they're here, rather than lap and not know exactly what they're doing. Because as soon as they get here, it can be quite overwhelming to be in front of those views and not really know what they're going to do next.
You have a number of educational programs and cultural events. Would you like to tell us a little more about what these are like and how you connect with the local schools and communities?
Well, from the very beginning of actually founding the Sculpture Park and the 3D Foundation, one of our aims was right away from the start to include the local community via children's classes. But the one thing that we really wanted to do was also include the local community to demystify what is it that a sculptor does and how do they do it. And so right away, we got a fair amount of local and government funding because of this component. We were not just going to create a sculpture park that was just for tourists that travel around the world for art and have nothing to do with the people who actually live in this area. So from the start, this whole idea of demystifying the world of art, and in particular making sculpture, we encouraged every single artist who was participating, they would actually have to give a class to the local kids, and it could be about how they make work or about whatever they wanted to really share. And in doing so, what was really lovely to see was the children in particular being so excited that a cement mixer that they had known their parents to use, or any other tools that they've seen around their house or in their life, that it could be used for something creative, or things that they had no idea that you could make sculptures out of marshmallows and spaghetti and dried pasta. So there was a lot of like, wow, this is possible. And for us, it was great because the more we're involved with the community, and obviously Kiki and I are already involved with the community, but this was really bringing a whole exchange with international artists and making the artists also feel comfortable. And I think that makes the residency really special because the artist not only gets invited, they get to find an area on the mountain that they think this is my spot. They then focus on this topic of whatever the curatorial premise about the environment is. They meet all the incredible scientists, engineers, etc. But then they take all of that and they turn it into a really fun, interesting kids class. So it has this nice full circle. And I think that that is something that we're really proud of. And it's really important to us that that takes place.
You have a brilliant artist coming up for your May residency this year, Rana Begum. Can you tell us a little more about her?
I have been to her studio, which was really well, wonderful experience. It's always wonderful also to see an artist in their studio, then see them in the mountains, and then the return back to their studio. There's such a transformation. But Kiki, maybe you want to talk a bit more about why specifically we chose Rana, because she has some very, very interesting work.
I absolutely love her work. I find it quite interesting in the way she plays with light, she plays with layering and color in particular. So we've had discussions with her, and at one point she was talking about maybe not incorporating color into the piece in the park. And that's one place where I very much put my foot down and I said, no, please, please use color in your work because that's what you do. And it would be almost disappointing to have a Rana Begum work that has no color involved, like the interaction of color and so forth up on the mountain. And I think it's something that the sculpture park right now is crying for. We have really just one piece at the moment that has any color on it, which is Donna Dodson's Baby Bringer. And it would be just so lovely to get more in there and some more balance and have that interplay with nature that I think she will manage to do.
What's next for Verbier 3D Sculpture Park and Residency?
Well, we just opened in the last 6 months. We just opened a community art space in Verbier, which is very exciting. So it's the first time that we have walls, actually. And we're very centrally located and we promote local artists as well. So the whole education side is there, but we also promote local artists and artisans. We have a shop, we have exhibitions, we have art classes for adults, for kids, basically.
Year-round after school program as well. It's a proper pottery section, a proper printmaking section, and a wood carving section. So it's including gallery space. So it's a real first for us, but it's wonderful because now when we have artists in our residency come, we also now have a nice space to offer them up in Verbier as an office / art studio when they want to work out ideas, if they're not hiking around the mountain, trying to sort those ideas out in nature.
Well, I'd like to thank you both so much for taking the time to share your story and valuable insight with us. And it's been a pleasure speaking with you. I wish you continued success.
Well, thank you very much for having us. We enjoyed it.
Thank you so much. It was great.
I'm your host, Susan Cohn, and we thank you for listening to Art World Innovators here on UMFM 101.5 at the University of Manitoba. Join us again next Wednesday from 5:30 to 6 p.m. for more on today's innovators in the art world.
Good evening. This is the Winnipeg neighborhood Elmwood, and you're listening to UMFM 101.5 FM in Winnipeg. Thank you.